She was about 20, with green streaks in her hair and one of those cartilage nose piercings that unfortunately reminded me of cows. "I'm sorry. We usually carry organic, gluten-free crackers baked by a local artisan shop, but we're out at the moment."
"Dry toast?" I said weakly.
"Of course," she chirped. "Wheat, rye, baguette, gluten-free, challah, or 12-grain.
I blanched. I hadn't known there were even 12 different grains out there. Bread toast?
When she'd gone back to procure my toast, probably by, I don't know, harvesting the wheat from a field behind the restaurant and crushing it with a mortar and pestle she'd hand-carved out of marble, I looked around the crowded restaurant, deciding it was a minor miracle that we'd managed to hit the right lull to get a table. I'd never been to Boulder before, but everyone looked so healthy. They were chatting and laughing in variations of hiking boots and shorts, practically glowing with wholesome good humor. Nearly every patron had a reusable water bottle in front of them or peeking out of a purse. They were also almost exclusively white.
"Man, I don't get this place," Molly declared.
She was studying the people around us with obvious curiosity.
"I mean, L.A. has plenty of rich hippies, but it's like we're stuck inside a commercial for the world's happiest and most expensive summer camp."
"I think it has something to do with the fact that their tans are real," I suggested.
Lex walked in a few minutes later, moving through the restaurant with confidence and purpose, like the soldier she used to be. She was about my height, with reddish-brown hair and blue eyes. Her face was surprisingly youthful, and I realized that she didn't look a day older than when I'd first met her, 3 years earlier. This probably had to do with her witch blood. Foundry witches age very slowly, something about their cells not wanting to die. She wore jeans and a gray tank top under an unbuttoned flannel shirt, and I could see the cords of muscle on her forearms and shoulders. As she entered my radius, I was amazed, once again, by how powerful she was. Kirsten was easily the most powerful witch in L.A., but Lex left even her in the dust. I half rose from my chair and waved. She nodded and came over, looking a little irritated. As she got closer and took in my appearance, though, her face blanched.
"What happened to you?"
she asked me, taking a seat.
"You look terrible."
"Hello to you, too," I said dryly. "I just got over the flu." The lie came out of my mouth fast and easy, but then covering shit up is what I do for a living.
Lex shrugged, her eyes cutting over to Molly. They'd met a few months earlier, during the vampire trials in L.A.
"I didn't know you were coming along," she said, her voice neutral. "Isn't that kind of dangerous?"
"Because of the sunlight?" Molly said, cheerful as ever. "Nah, Scarlet's got my back. She expands her bubble to make sure I stay human. She's really good at it."
"Huh."
Lex looked sort of wistful, and I remembered that last I heard, she still had a vampire boyfriend. I wanted to ask if the two of them spent time around Lex's niece, who was also a null, but I had the feeling that bringing Charlie into the conversation wouldn't go well for me. And besides, it wasn't really any of my business. The waitress dropped off my toast and wrote down orders: coffee for Lex and a giant stack of pancakes for Molly. When she'd disappeared back to the kitchen, Lex turned to me.
"So, what's going on?"
Right. Lex wasn't exactly known for small talk. I pushed out a breath.
"I need a favor. I'd like you to get me an audience with Maven. Tonight."
She arched an eyebrow. After a moment, she said in a low voice,
"Couldn't your cardinal vampire have set that up?"
"Yeah, well, that's the other part of the favor. I don't want Dashiell to find out we came here." Lex leaned back in her chair, regarding me.
"You know I have to ask you what this is about," she said eventually.
"It really isn't complicated. I have a question about nulls. Maven is very old, therefore I'm hoping she'll know the answer."
Lex stared me down.
You sneak into Maven's territory to quiz her without your boss knowing, and you think I'm going to buy that this isn't complicated?
Well, yeah.
What's the question?
I'd rather not say. She didn't roll her eyes because Lex is too scary for that. Instead, her expression suggested I was on my way to a serious ass-kicking.
You're a null, Scarlet. I would be a complete idiot to put you alone in a room with one of the world's most powerful vampires.
Look, I don't even need to be close enough to turn her to human again. It's just a question.
Mm-hmm, she said sarcastically. Just a question that you drove 15 hours overnight to ask at the spur of the moment. Presumably because it's too sensitive to discuss over the phone. And you expect me to take your word that you won't turn her human?
We went silent as the waitress returned with the other orders. Molly, who had been watching our exchange with undisguised interest, gleefully attacked her plate of pancakes and hash browns. Lex took a sip of her coffee and then set it down, temporarily distracted by Molly's obvious enjoyment. She watched her with frank curiosity. I leaned forward.
Lex, come on. This isn't us.
I know you place as much value on vampire political shit as I do, which is 0 units of value. So how about we don't do the political negotiation dance, and instead you just ask your boss if I can have 5 minutes of her time? She opened her mouth to answer, but just then her eyes flicked sideways, taking in the woman making her way toward our table. She was in her late 30s, with dark blonde hair and tired brown eyes, and she carried a thick binder with scraps of paper sticking out.
Oh, shit, Lex muttered under her breath. My cousin, she's a civilian.
She pushed back her chair and stood up.
Hey, Bree,
she said as the other woman came over to give her a hug.
What are you doing here?
Hey, yourself, the woman replied. I'm meeting Elise for brunch so we can do wedding planning.
She glanced at us with open curiosity.
I don't think I've met your army friends.
No, they're,
She started to look panicked, so I stood up, pasting on a smile.
I'm Scarlet, I said politely, standing up and holding out my hand. Actually, Lex and I don't know each other too well, but we have a mutual friend in Las Vegas. I was passing through town with my roommate, Molly, on our way to Denver.
Molly dutifully stood up and shook hands too, still chewing a mouthful of pancakes.
We thought we'd spend a day seeing Boulder, and Sashi suggested we get coffee with Lex.
There. That covered all the details, right?
Lex was staring at me, her eyes bugging out a little, but the moment I said the word Sashi, her cousin was instantly smiling.
Well, I'm Bree, Lex's cousin, and we all adore Sashi. And Grace, of course.
Her face brightened, and she looked at her cousin.
Lex, you should invite them to May birthdays tonight.
Oh, I don't think...
Lex started, but Molly perked up, swallowing her food.
What's May birthdays?
She asked.
The Luthers get together every few weeks to celebrate the birthdays from that month,
Bree explained.
Usually it's the first weekend of the month, but our cousin Jake and his family will be on vacation, so we're doing it a week early. And Grace will be there.
I'm sure Scarlet and Molly want to explore Boulder,
Lex began, but Molly interrupted again.
That sounds like fun, she said brightly. If you're sure we wouldn't be imposing.
Huh?
My head swiveled toward her, and I recognized the gleam in Molly's eye. What was she up to?
Not at all, Bree assured us, her eyes sparkling. There are always plenty of friends of family there.
She seemed to be suppressing a mischievous smile as she added,
Of course, they're not usually Lex's friends.
Lex looked like she was about to argue, but Bree turned to her and said,
Are you bringing Quinn, too? Or does he still have that weird work schedule?
Lex looked at me, and we had a perfect mind-meld moment. I nodded at her, and a tiny, unguarded smile broke over her face.
probably the first one I'd seen from her.
Yeah, she said to Bree.
Yeah, he's coming.
Great!
5:30 at your mom and dad's, Bree reminded Lex. Don't forget this time.
I won't.
Bree waved and went off to a table near the window. Lex perched on the edge of her chair.
I should go before my other cousin gets here, she said, taking a final sip of coffee and putting it down.
She's a cop. She'll have lots of questions.
She hesitated for a second, looking at me.
You'll really wake Quinn up to come with us?
If you're sure he won't mind, I said. Most vampires flip out when I wake them without express permission. The same tiny smile.
Quinn isn't most vampires.
And Maven? I pushed. The smile faded.
I'll leave word at the coffee shop. She'll get it when she wakes up. But even if she agrees, I need to be in the room. That's non-negotiable.
I chewed on my lip for a second, but when Lex said non-negotiable, she meant it.
We were going to have to trust her.
I nodded.
I'll text my address to your new number. Quinn's there now. Come around 5.
She turned to go, then paused and looked back over her shoulder.
Stay out of trouble today.
The phrase, this is my town, was clearly implied.
Oh, we will,
Molly said cheerfully. When she was gone, I turned to Molly.
What was that about? Why do you want to go to a family party for a family you don't even know?
Molly rolled her eyes.
Come on! Don't tell me you're not curious about Lex's life. And I want to meet the baby Null. Besides, we've got time to kill before sunset.
These points are not bad points, I admitted. It would be interesting to see Lex in her natural habitat. And if enabling Quinn to attend the party ingratiated me to her a little, that couldn't hurt my case later.
Okay, family party it is.
Chapter 7. When Jesse Cruz opened his eyes again, he was lying on the floor of an LAPD evidence room.
That's what it looked like, anyway.
He didn't recognize the specific lockup. The LAPD had 21 separate division stations, and he'd only visited a handful of them. But there were metal shelves surrounding him on every side, and they were loaded down with overflowing boxes, each one stamped with the official LAPD seal.
How the hell could the Lipari'i witches have gotten him this deep inside an evidence room? Were they capable of teleportation?
Jesse sat up slowly, checking himself for injuries. His mouth was dry and his head ached, but otherwise he felt okay. He reached for his phone, but it wasn't in his pocket.
How long had he been out?
He checked his watch, but that was gone too, along with his wallet. He stood up, intending to find his way out of there, or at least someone who could help him. The Lipari'i had taken Shadow, and Scarlet needed him. Jesse had no idea what he was going to say to whatever cops he found, but he couldn't just sit around waiting for everything to resolve itself.
Hello? He called. Can I get some help?
There was no response, and nothing for Jesse to do but start walking. Which way was the exit, though? The room was dimly lit, and the shelves seemed to stretch on endlessly. He squinted in either direction, picked one, and started walking. He only passed a few of the shelves before realizing that something was very wrong. It was too quiet, for one thing. Evidence rooms weren't usually soundproofed, and he should have been able to hear the endless bustle of one of the busiest police forces in the world. But after he noticed this, he began to realize that other details were off, too. None of the boxes had lids, and there were no case numbers written on the sides. He stopped and pulled out a box, peering inside to see a Glock and an older model cell phone. They were open to the elements, not even wrapped in plastic. Jesse reached in and touched the phone. It crumbled in his hand, turning into a chunky dust that somehow left his fingers greasy. He tried the gun next, But the same thing happened. Jesse pushed that box aside, wiped his hands on his jeans, and reached for the box next to it. This one held textbooks and clothes, the kind of stuff Jesse himself had owned as a high school student. He reached for them anyway, but everything crumbled again. When he turned back, the first box was in its original position, with the intact gun and cell phone sitting in their original spots. Jesse paused. Was he losing it? Had someone replaced the box with magic? He was really starting to wish he'd kept some of Kirsten's witch bags close at hand.
Hello?
He called again.
Who's out there?
If this had been a movie, he would have heard a sudden malicious giggle, but there was nothing but empty silence that seemed to go on forever. How big was this room? Jesse reached for the cell phone again. This time, his fingers went right through it, like it was a ghost. Or he was. His fingers felt cold where they touched the non-phone, and he jerked his hand back. Nothing is real, he muttered to himself. He tried touching the shelf itself, wondering if he could walk through the damn thing. But no, of course that had structure. With no better ideas, Jesse resumed walking. It was a little ridiculous, but the lidless boxes were making him more edgy than anything else. Jesse had spent years having proper procedure drilled into him, and the sight of open evidence boxes was jangling his nerves, like seeing someone chain-smoking inside an elementary school. It was just wrong. Every now and then, he pulled out boxes and tried to grab whatever was inside, just for the hell of it. Keychains, old trophies, children's toys, ticket stubs. Everything disintegrated. Next, he tried leaving boxes out to mark his path, but every time he looked away and then back again, they were gone. He walked and walked, sticking to a straight line so he wouldn't risk going in circles, but the aisle he was in simply didn't end. He was thirsty, and his empty stomach rumbled, but there was nothing to eat except cardboard boxes, and Jesse had a feeling even that wouldn't work. After what felt like hours of this strange limbo, he caught movement out of the corner of his eye. A woman was curled up on the waist-high shelf, arms around her knees, watching him placidly. Jesse jumped.
Jesus!
She smiled at him, twisting sideways and unfolding her limbs like a giant insect. She stood up and tossed back her colorless hair, and Jesse realized it was the Lupari witch, Sabine.
You!
He said, darting forward to grab her.
Where?
But his hand passed right through her frail-looking arm.
Hello, Jesse, she said with a smirk. Welcome to the Twisted Slumber.
You can speak English, he said,
the first thought that came to his mind. She didn't even have an accent. But Sabine shook her head.
I control this space. If I want you to understand me in your dream, you will.
This isn't a dream, he scoffed. I feel hunger. Thirst.
Lightly, he smacked the back of his hand against a shelf, getting a quick flare of pain in response.
I can even get hurt.
This isn't a normal dream, no. This is one that I twisted for you, using a piece of my magic. You should feel special. I don't do this spell for just anyone.
Seriously?
He crossed his arms over his chest.
And this is your best shot at me? Miles of shelves? Wow, you sure showed me.
Her smile just widened. She stepped closer to him, seeming to grow taller with each step, until she didn't have to look up to meet his eyes.
Ah, but the tedium is the whole point. You're a man of action, but there's nothing for you to do.
She spread her arms, indicating the endless rows.
There are no dragons to slay, or vampires, for that matter, and no way to get yourself out.
You can walk or run or climb the shelves. You can lay down and wait to die. It doesn't matter. Nothing you do will matter.
Jesse felt it then. The hopelessness. The futility. Despite his bravado, his shoulders slumped.
Why? Why are you doing this to me?
Where is Scarlett Bernard?
I don't know, he said, enunciating each word.
She studied him for another moment, then sighed.
You are telling the truth. That is unfortunate. But we will see if you have other information we can use. Killian has some ideas.
They could get information from him? That meant Jesse had to be careful. He imagined building a wall to block off the most recent information he'd received about Scarlett. He didn't even let himself think about what it was.
What do you want from Scarlett?
He said to the woman.
You've got Shadow.
Sabine hesitated for a moment, then shrugged, as if realizing it didn't matter what she told Jesse at this point.
Los Angeles needs to be taught a lesson, she said calmly. Taking back our Bargest isn't enough. Don't worry, you'll be dead very soon. It won't matter for you.
Well, that wasn't going to get him anywhere. Jesse thought of Killian's earlier questions.
You were tracking Scarlett's van and Molly's car.
The corners of Sabine's lips turned down in a whatever expression.
To her credit, she has become good at examining her vehicle for tracking devices. But we are better.
And yet she left town without you knowing.
Sabine bared her teeth.
She'll come back, especially if someone finds your body.
Fear threatened to overwhelm him then, but he wasn't going to let himself freak out in front of this witch.
So you're going to kill me?
She edged even closer to him, and Jesse could feel her hot breath on his face.
How could this possibly be a dream? I am killing you now. The twisted slumber is a fever dream. Emphasis on the fever. Even now, your body temperature is rising past what a human being can survive. A day, maybe two, and your organs will begin to shut down from dehydration.
She clucked her tongue.
So sad. But the Null will return when she learns you're missing, and we will be waiting for her. There is enough time.
That makes it sound like you're in a hurry, Jesse guessed. Why? What's coming?
This time, Sabine frowned. As quickly as she had appeared, she blinked away again.
Interesting.
But now he was alone, with infinite miles of shelves on all sides. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just like Sabine had said. Jesse felt panic rising in his chest, and he resolutely began to walk again, trying to think this through. The Luparii wanted Scarlett, obviously. But why? There were plenty of horrible things you could do with a Null, including assassinating powerful vampires. But if all they wanted was to kidnap Scarlett and take her back to France, they could have done that any time. Scarlett didn't take Shadow everywhere. There would have been opportunities to snatch her away. And the same went for killing Scarlett. If they'd been tracking her, they'd been watching for long enough to just shoot her when no one expected it. No. Timing was definitely a factor here, which made it likely that Killian and Sabine had been watching in anticipation of something. A signal, maybe, or a certain date? Scarlett had thrown them off by skipping town. His thoughts kept going in circles, although they seemed to end up in the same place. Was his body really dying? He certainly wouldn't put it past Sabine to lie to him, but he was thirsty and hungry. It was worrisome. On the other hand, if he was dying anyway, why hadn't they just shot him? Killian had specifically mentioned wanting to know more about Jesse, but how would the fake LAPD station help them learn about him? Unless...
He grabbed the closest box and looked inside. To his surprise, the top layer was hardcover copies of Wunderkind, the nonfiction book he'd co-written. Jesse hadn't been able to interact with the contents of the boxes, so he didn't bother touching the book itself. Instead, he tipped the entire box sideways onto the floor. Many more copies of the book spilled out, along with a small gold band. A wedding ring. Jesse crouched down for a closer look. It was his wedding ring, from his brief marriage to the book's ghostwriter. It was like a fog clearing. The textbooks were his textbooks. The Glock was his first gun, and the ticket stubs were from concerts he'd seen. He looked in another box, and this one held plastic claws and giant wolf paws made from plaster. This was the evidence he'd planted to frame the Luparii witch for Henry Remus's murder. Excited, he grabbed at the next box, the charred remains of a human body with a silver Rolex still clinging to the wrist. Lex's sister, Sam, whom he'd helped Scarlet cremate. The faint stink of charred flesh was still rising from it. Jesse yanked his hand back from the box, looking around him. This wasn't just his deep history, at least not anymore. These were his sins. Jesse looked up at the mundane ceiling, raising his voice. "This isn't a dream," he accused. "It's a raid. You're going through my memories. What are you looking for?" There was no answer, of course. Chapter 8. Molly and I spent the afternoon exploring Boulder, which was kind of a cool little town once you got past its intense and all-encompassing animosity toward gluten. Molly quizzed the restaurant hostess on the best places to visit, and an hour later we were boarding a converted school bus for Banjo Billy's bus tour, which was much less cheesy than the name implies. We got a pretty good overview of the town's history, and by the time the bus returned, Molly knew exactly where she wanted to go next. She dragged me up and down Pearl Street, into shops that ran the gamut from quirky kitchen supplies to extreme sports gear. The whole time, Molly kept forcing small amounts of bland food on me, and I had to admit, it helped. The nausea abated enough for us to get a big lunch at a taco place, where I made Molly move outside so they wouldn't kick us out from her moans of ecstasy. The food was pretty good. In the early afternoon, I tried to check in with Jesse, but he didn't answer either his phone or the bat phone. I frowned and checked my watch. Could he be napping? Or maybe he took Shadow for a run? I made a mental note to try again later. And we were off to another store. I may have complained a little. Okay, a lot. About the shopping. But it really was nice to spend a few hours on just another weird shopping adventure with Molly. I stopped thinking about the pregnancy and just enjoyed myself. And then it was time to go meet Lex's vampire boyfriend. She lived well outside the Boulder city limits, in a little cabin in the middle of nowhere. It was neat and unadorned, at least on the outside. I suspected the lack of decoration was more Lex being guarded than Lex being boring. As soon as Molly and I climbed out of Eleanor, I could hear the barking of what sounded like an entire pack of dogs. She and I exchanged a look and shrugged. "Nice house," Molly commented, knocking on the door. "Can you feel the boyfriend yet?" "That would be impolite," I informed her. I was reining in my radius a bit so I wouldn't turn the boyfriend, Quinn, human until Lex was ready. She opened the door, looking a little breathless. Her hair was loose and slightly damp, and she'd changed into nice jeans and a long black top that was pulled in at her waist with straps that tied around the back. She'd even put on a little makeup. It was probably the most dressed up I'd ever seen her. "I should have asked if you were okay with animals," she shouted over the barking, but Molly and I had both already crouched down to greet the four dogs, which included a couple of lab mixes, a tiny and sort of vacant-looking Yorkie, and a slightly calmer mixed breed who hung back a little, protecting his mistress.
That was what I noticed anyway, before one of the labs knocked me over so he could better reach my face for licking. I lost my grip on my radius, but wherever Quinn was, it wasn't close enough for me to turn him human yet.
Cody!
Lex admonished, looking scandalized. But I laughed, rolling away and climbing to my feet.
I'm sorry,
Lex said, and she actually looked kind of guilty.
They're a little exuberant. They don't meet new people very often. Come on in.
When they realized we were coming inside, where they would have even better access to us, the dogs calmed down and trotted happily alongside us as Lex led the way to a large, high-ceilinged space that served as a combination dining room and living room. Lex turned around, looking at me a little nervously. It was strange to see her look uncertain.
So, how does this work?
I'm kind of assuming Quinn has been around your niece before, I asked. She nodded.
Usually just at evening family functions, though, when it's natural for them to be together. We keep it as normal as possible. I don't ever want Charlie thinking we only love her for what she can do for Quinn.
It was a good attitude. I cleared my throat.
Okay. Well, if he knows what a null feels like, this should be pretty simple.
I pointed to a couch. Molly and I will sit here, and you can go be physically near him. I'll expand my radius, and when he wakes up, you can explain what's going on. Take whatever time you need. Lex was wringing her hands.
And you're sure he'll be okay?
She glanced at Molly, then back to me.
I mean, I know you've done this before, but can you really keep more than one vampire in your radius at a time during the day?
I blinked, surprised.
You don't know a whole lot about nulls, huh?
She started to look defensive, and I shook my head.
Sorry? Forget that.
If you're used to witch magic, and Charlie's a little kid, I can see where this would be confusing. Look, neutralizing magic doesn't affect me. It can't tire me out. And as long as they stay within my radius, there's no limit to the number of people I can... I flapped a hand, looking for the right word. Nullify, I guess? Like Molly said earlier, I can expand my radius to keep both of them in it. The only way Quinn would get hurt is if he, like, took off at a dead sprint when my back was turned, so I didn't know to widen my area.
Lex nodded, looking pacified. Okay, let's do this.
She disappeared down a hallway, and I heard a door open and close, probably to the basement. I counted to 10 before pushing out my radius until I could feel a second vampire. He was below us, deeper into the house. Some kind of basement hidey hole, probably. 10 minutes went by, and then I heard footsteps on the stairs. Lex emerged, trailed by a tall vampire who looked to be in his late 30s, wearing worn-looking jeans and a fitted gray t-shirt. He was handsome, with blonde hair and the kind of craggy face that would age well. If, that is, he could age. He started over to us, hand outstretched, but got distracted by the sunshine pouring in through the window behind me.
Whoa,
he breathed. Molly grinned, jumping up from her chair.
I know, right? Hi, I'm Molly.
Quinn, the man said absently. He had stopped just short of where the sunbeam hit the floor. Lex hung back, watching him with a little smile. Quinn looked over at me.
And you're Scarlet. Can I?
I waved him on.
Go ahead. It can't hurt you.
Impulsively, he turned and grabbed Lex's hand, pulling her with him into the sunlight. She put her arms around his neck, laughing, and I looked away, feeling an ache in the pit of my stomach. They were so obviously in love. Molly reached over and squeezed my hand.
So,
Quinn said, turning so Lex's back rested against his chest. His arms were still wrapped around her.
I hear there's a party.
Chapter 9.
Half an hour later, the four of us were climbing out of Lex's Subaru in front of a very large house in a very nice neighborhood. I didn't know anything about architectural styles or whatever, but it was brick, and there were arches, and Molly muttered the word Tony, so I figured Lex's parents were rich. That was interesting. She had never given off a spoiled rich kid vibe. Molly and I let Lex lead us in, and she gave me a wink over her shoulder. Okay, she had been right. This was fascinating. Inside, the noise hit me first, followed by the food smells. We went through a small foyer into a huge dining kitchen area where dozens of people were milling around, talking and laughing. As the door closed behind us, the number of people in the room instantly made me nervous. I wasn't claustrophobic, but I hadn't grown up with any extended family around. Even when my parents were alive, there were never more than four Bernards in a room. This was taking family birthday party to a level I hadn't experienced. The Luthers all had that fresh-faced look I had learned to associate with Boulder, and even if I hadn't known that many of them were related, I probably could have guessed by their similar features. Honey blonde hair, brown eyes, high cheekbones. It was like walking into a commercial for multivitamins. It made me want to drink a gallon of diet soda and eat a whole gas station pizza. A couple of them looked up as we came in, waved, and went back to talking. An older woman with silver hair and a stout figure came bustling over to Lex. Hi, honey.
Oh, Quinn, you made it.
That's wonderful. She smiled up at him, and then her eyes turned to Molly and me. And you must be Sashi's friends. I'm Lex's mom, Christy. Molly nudged me, and I stepped forward to shake hands and introduce myself. Lex got pulled into a conversation with a short-haired woman, but before I could even feel uncertain of myself, Christy Luther reached out and snagged the arm of a passing girl holding a loaded appetizer plate. She was college age, with olive skin, thick dark hair, and Sashi's features. I felt a jolt of recognition. She might have looked like her mother, but the confident stance and capable broad shoulders, those were purely from her father. From Will. Not many people knew that Will Carling, the alpha werewolf of Los Angeles, had a daughter. In fact, I was pretty sure Will himself didn't know. I'd only stumbled onto the secret by mistake, and now I felt myself gaping at her.
Oh, have you already met Grace?
Christy said. She goes to see you, and she's an honorary Luther. The girl turned toward us, her expression friendly and open, but held up a finger as she finished chewing something.
Sorry,
she said after swallowing, laughing at herself a little.
Hi, I'm Grace.
The laugh was eerily familiar. I wasn't imagining that. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Molly's eyes narrow slightly, her head tilting a little. She looked like she was trying to remember the name of a song stuck in her head.
Hi,
I said way too loudly. I cleared my throat and shook the girl's hand.
I mean, it's nice to meet you.
This is Scarlett and Molly, Christy went on. Scarlett is friends with your mom.
Her voice was gentle, but Grace's face instantly froze over, and she took her hand back without shaking Molly's.
Oh,
she said coolly.
How do you know Sashi?
Whoa. Calling her mother by her first name?
Through mutual friends, I said noncommittally. I was just at your house a few weeks ago, in Las Vegas. She has pictures of you everywhere.
Yeah, well. The girl looked down at her plate, which still had a pile of chips and salsa.
Excuse me, I think I need more salsa.
After she'd departed, Christy sighed.
I'm sorry about that. I was hoping drawing her into a conversation about her mom might help.
They're estranged? I asked. I didn't want to blow my friends with Sashi cover, but I couldn't help myself.
Sashi didn't mention anything.
No, she wouldn't,
Christy said wryly. Sashi and my former son-in-law, John, dated for a few years, but it didn't work out. Grace took the breakup hard.
Oh, I said stupidly, as pieces of information fell into place. When I was in Vegas, Sashi had told me she'd tried, and failed, to move on from Will. Grace Brighton wasn't a witch, which meant Sashi had also kept that part of her life away from her daughter. Jesus, I knew more about these people than they did. The conversation moved on. Christy introduced us to several other people, but even as I shook hands, I knew I had no hope of remembering all their names. I did take note of John, Lex's brother-in-law, and Charlie's dad. He was noteworthy. Very handsome, with bronze Native American coloring and an easy, likable demeanor that made me inwardly cringe with guilt. He was friendly enough, asking questions about the places we'd visited in Boulder, but I had trouble concentrating on the conversation. In the back of my mind, I couldn't stop seeing his wife's dead body as it went into the furnace. Suddenly, this wasn't so fun. Molly, who'd been quietly working her way through a plate of food, saw the look on my face after John excused himself. She knew what I'd done to Samantha Wheaton's corpse and reached out to squeeze my hand. I shot her a smile, but I was a little rattled at the emotional overload. Goddamned baby hormones. After introductions, Christy encouraged us to go get food, and I was grateful for the excuse to get away. As we approached the buffet table, however, the smell of cooked meat hit me wrong. Molly saw the look on my face and winced. "Bathroom?" she asked in a low voice. I nodded, struggling to keep down the contents of my stomach.
"Go, I'll cover for you."
Panicked, I wove my way through the crowd toward the nearest hallway. There were several closed doors, but one of them was standing open, and I could see a tiled floor and a toilet. I beelined toward it, not even pausing to flick on the light. I practically dove for the toilet. I don't know how much time passed while I was throwing up, but after a while the light snapped on, and I blearily lifted my head, expecting to see Molly. Instead, a Native American woman with a long gray braid was scowling at me with her hands on her hips, as though I'd burst in on her in the bathroom, and not the other way around.
"You could at least close the door if you're gonna do that," she snapped. "Or do you get off on people walking in on you puking?"
I fell back on my butt. The vomiting was done, I thought, but I didn't have the strength to get up yet. The older woman closed the bathroom door and practically stomped over to the toilet. She humphed and hit the flush lever, then unceremoniously lifted her dress and plopped down to urinate. I scooted away, embarrassed. She snorted.
"Oh, sure. You're happy to let the whole world see you puke, but one old woman peeing is an outrage."
She was probably only in her late 50s and moved like she was ready to play college football, so the old woman thing was just perturbing.
"How far along are you?"
she demanded. I looked back, surprised.
"What? How far along?"
she repeated.
6, 8 weeks? I don't know.
She stood up, flushed the toilet, and went to the sink.
"You don't even know how far along you are?"
she said scornfully. Okay, she was starting to piss me off. And it was only then, when I stopped thinking about the nausea and really focused on her, that I realized the woman was registering in my radius. She was a witch. But there was something weird about her magic. It was extremely faint. In fact, I'd have guessed it was just dormant witch blood, except I can't feel that at all.
"You girls these days,"
she groused to herself, scrubbing her hands with expensive-looking lavender soap.
"Half of you act like no one in the world has ever had a baby before you, and the other half tries to pretend like nothing is happening."
That was enough. Using the tub for support, I climbed to my feet, glaring at her.
"Listen up, old woman. I'm sorry I startled you, but you're obviously not in a position to lecture me about etiquette, and I don't owe you any personal details about my life. Back the fuck off."
For the first time, a tiny smile appeared on the woman's creased face.
She wiped her hands on a towel and thrust the right one at me.
"I'm Blossom," she said. "John's mother."
"Scarlet." I shook her hand.
"You want me to get your partner for you?"
she asked, nodding at the door. I was confused for a second, then got it.
"Molly?"
No, she's just my friend.
"Is your baby daddy here?"
She looked pointedly at my stomach.
"He's dead,"
I said flatly.
"Oh."
She leaned back against the counter, looking, well, not contrite exactly, but thoughtful.
"Is there anything else I can help you with?"
I said sarcastically. "Perhaps you'd like to discuss my history with yeast infections, or the times I've been groped on public transportation. My parents were murdered. Want to talk about that?" Now the old lady grinned at me approvingly.
"I like you," she said. "The rest of these white people are scared of me, but you push back."
I went to the sink and rinsed out my mouth.
"The old witch likes me," I muttered. "Lucky me."
I turned toward the door, but Blossom stepped in front of it, looking wary.
"Why do you call me that?"
"Old?" I asked, just to be a dick. She waved a hand.
"The other thing."
I lowered my voice.
"Because you've got witch blood."
I watched her face for recognition, and got it. "You don't practice magic, and you haven't for a very long time, but you activated it when you were a girl. It's still inside you." The woman's mouth dropped open.
"How do you know that?"
Shit. I'd opened my big mouth to show off, and now I was stuck. This woman already knew I was pregnant. If she found out I was a null, too... I took a leap.
"Sam told me," I said at last. "I knew her in L.A.
Blossom's face slowly relaxed, though she still looked wary.
"I didn't think she knew."
When I didn't say anything else, she shook her head.
"John must have told her."
Suddenly anxious, she met my eyes.
"You won't tell anyone?"
"If you don't mention that I'm pregnant," I said sweetly. That approving grin again.
"Deal."
Blossom stepped away from the door, waving me on.
"Go get some crackers or something."
I sidled around her and escaped through the door.
What was it with everyone and the damned crackers?
Chapter 10. When I went back into the hallway, I felt a familiar sensation in my radius, sort of like light being bent through a crystal. I turned around just as a line of children stampeded through the room, laughing as they knocked into grown-ups and furniture.
"Charlie,"
Lex called, a little stern.
"Come here, please."
A small girl near the back peeled off from the group and turned to face us, pushing long, dark hair out of her face. My breath caught. She was probably around 5, wearing a green sundress and Chuck Taylor sneakers spattered with paint and primary colors. She gazed up at Lex with bright blue eyes. Except for the darker hair and olive skin, she could have been Lex's younger clone. Then the little girl frowned, tilting her head sideways as her eyes took in the rest of us.
"Hi, Auntie,"
she said, drawing closer. Her eyes landed on Molly, widening with interest.
"Hey, you're different. Like Uncle Quinn."
"Charlie, this is Miss Molly," Lex said.
Molly held out a hand for the girl to shake. Charlie took it, looking amused at the adult ritual.
"And this is Miss Scarlet,"
Lex said, pointing at me. For the first time, the girl turned all her attention to me.
"You're pretty,"
she said. I blinked.
"Thank you. I think you're very pretty, too."
Wait, that was wrong, wasn't it? I'd read somewhere that we were supposed to praise little girls for their accomplishments, not their looks. God damn it, I'd messed this up already. Charlie was still studying me. I felt incredibly awkward, like everyone in the whole room must be staring at my embarrassing attempts to connect with a child. But really, it was only Lex and Molly. The little girl grabbed my hand and tugged down. Obediently, I knelt on the floor in front of her, Lex hovering anxiously over us. Charlie's face screwed up with concentration, and she pushed hair away from my face and leaned toward me so she could whisper in my ear.
Why do you feel different?
Because I'm like you, I said quietly. Those feelings you get around certain people, I get them too. Charlie looked startled and glanced up at her aunt.
My daddy says I'm not supposed to talk about them, she said, just loud enough for Lex to hear.
It's okay, Charlie, Lex assured her. It's safe to trust Miss Scarlet. The little girl studied her aunt for a moment, as if she thought Lex might be testing her. Then she shrugged and turned back to me.
Why do we get them?
She asked. I glanced up at Lex, who was chewing on her lower lip as she watched us. Until she was older, it wasn't safe for Charlie to know about the old world. She wouldn't understand that she needed to keep it a secret, which could put her friends or family in danger. Because we're very special, I told Charlie. When you get older, you'll learn more about what those feelings mean. Her face brightened.
'Cause you'll teach me?
There was suddenly a lump in my throat. Stupid hormones. Lex started to say something, to make an excuse for me, but I said to Charlie, It might be me, or it might be your Aunt Lex. With no further ado, Charlie climbed into my lap, her tanned arms loose around my shoulders. I held very still, like a butterfly had just landed on my arm. Small hands picked up a strand of my hair and began twisting and curling it around her finger.
Auntie Lex feels different, too,
Charlie confided, low enough so Lex couldn't hear. I nodded. She's very strong.
'Cause she was a soldier.
Well, close enough.
Right. When I grow up, I might be a soldier, too, Charlie went on. But I'm definitely gonna be a paleontologist. And have a lemonade stand. And I'll ride horses and have 6 dogs. That's more than Aunt Lex has, but she has cats, too.
She wrinkled her nose.
I don't like cats.
Me either, I told her. Nearby, Lex's phone buzzed, and she stepped a few feet away to answer it. Molly was still watching Charlie and me, looking amused. I tried to think of something else to say. I have a dog, too, I finally offered. Her name is Shadow. She's really big.
And really ugly, Molly added.
I glared up at her, but she just lifted an eyebrow to say, Well, she is.
Can I see a picture on your phone?
Charlie asked me eagerly. I started to reach for the phone in my pocket, but remembered it was the burner. I don't have any on my phone right now, I told her regretfully.
Oh.
She looked at me with disappointment and judgment. Ah, so there was some of her aunt in her, too. Luckily, at that moment, Lex hung up the phone and turned back to us.
We're on, she said to me. She's expecting you.
I nodded.
Charlie,
Lex said.
Miss Scarlet and I need to leave now.
Charlie looked up with obvious displeasure, squeezing the strands of my hair closer, like she was protecting them.
But she's like me.
I know. We still need to leave, though.
Besides, it's almost your bedtime. Charlie pouted, but turned back to me.
Do you have FaceTime?
She demanded. That threw me for a second. I hadn't realized 5-year-olds were aware of FaceTime. But then again, what the hell did I know about kids?
Yes, I do.
So we'll talk on FaceTime, Charlie decided. That's what I do with Grandma Blossom, or with Auntie when she has to be gone for days.
Oh, okay, I said, bewildered. We can FaceTime.
Then you can go, I guess.
Charlie released her death grip on my hair and climbed out of my lap.
Bye,
she yelled over her shoulder, racing off to find the rest of the kids. I blinked, What had just happened? Molly was grinning as she held out a hand to me.
So, that was Charlie,
Lex said, with a smile I hadn't seen from her before. It was proud, and a little embarrassed, and sort of fierce, like a mom.
She's kind of a force of nature,
Lex added.
Yeah.
I used Molly's hand to pull myself up.
I'm getting that.
The sun had gone down while we were at dinner. Lex drove us back to the Pearl Street Mall area, parking near a funny little coffee shop with a weird setup. Most of the coffee shops I'd been to shared the same basic layout, one big room with a counter somewhere. But the front doors at Magic Beans opened into a short hallway with multiple doors leading off in different directions. There were day-glow arrows painted on the floor that eventually led us toward a counter where a bored-looking teenage boy looked up from a textbook.
Oh, hey, Lex. Hey, Quinn,
he said.
Is Maven around?
Lex asked.
She's waiting for you in the back, he replied. Do you guys want coffee?
Sure,
Lex said, looking at Molly and me. We both nodded.
Make it four,
Quinn said, looking suddenly enthusiastic.
Whoa, Mr. Quinn drinking the coffee. Crazy,
the kid said in a monotone, and I suddenly remembered that marijuana was legal in Colorado. He handed out the full cups, and Quinn took a couple of sips, looking fascinated.
Huh,
he said, wrinkling his nose.
I don't remember it being so gross.
You get used to it,
I told him. He put the cup down on the counter.
Or not.
Ready?
Lex asked me. I nodded, and she looked at Molly.
Wait here, please. Just as a security thing.
Molly rolled her eyes, but I gave Lex a little salute.
I'll stay out here, too,
Quinn said, locking eyes with Lex.
Give you guys some privacy.
I pulled in my radius as we entered a large room with a concrete floor and a small stage. Folding chairs were set around a card table, and a young woman was perched on a chair with one foot folded under her. Maven was very young-looking, with a fashion sense I would describe as eclectic, if I needed to be polite. She wore a baggy denim dress that hung to the floor, along with huge 80s-style glasses that somehow clashed with her bright orange hair. And she had layers and layers of cheap costume jewelry that reminded me of Mardi Gras beads. Lex introduced me, and Maven gestured for us to sit. I took the seat farthest from her so I could keep her out of my cinched-in radius.
Thank you for meeting with me,
I said formally. She smiled.
You certainly piqued my interest,
she said, her diction completely at odds with her appearance. She sounded like people in the old movies, with that fancy mid-Atlantic kind of accent. She waved at me.
It's all right. You can release it. I wouldn't mind being human for a little while.
Surprised, I released my grip on my radius. Maven gasped, clutching at her chest as her heart started beating and her lungs struggled with the sudden need for air. Vampires usually do those things anyway, to blend in and to speak, but they don't have to devote energy to it, any more than I have to devote energy to walking on my tiptoes. So Maven's shocked reaction was typical of most vampires, but for once, I was equally floored. When a vampire is in my radius, I get a vague sense of their power and age. Dashiell was powerful, but not very old. Molly had average power, average age. Quinn was young and a little stronger than most vampires his age. But this woman? Holy shit! I breathed out, feeling the sudden compulsion to stand up and curtsy. She really was the oldest vampire I'd ever felt, at least 1,000 years old. 1,000 years old. And she had every bit of power those years afforded. Chapter 11. There was a long silence. Lex perched on the edge of her seat, looking back and forth between us like she didn't know who to protect from whom. It would have been funny if I wasn't so gobsmacked. Wait, had I really just used the word gobsmacked?
It's okay,
Maven gasped, smiling at Lex.
We just need a moment.
After a few minutes, we were both more or less recovered, although I now had 1,000 questions. This woman was powerful as hell. What was she doing in Boulder, Colorado? She could literally be running the world. Stay on task, Scarlet. I took a sip of my coffee, and Maven's nostrils flared.
May I?
She said, hopefully.
Yeah, of course.
I slid the cup over to her, and she took a tiny sip, looking intensely thoughtful. She said, nodding her head a little.
I usually keep a cup lying around, as though it's mine, but I've never actually tasted this stuff.
Have you been around Nulls before? I asked, hoping the answer was yes. She wouldn't be much help to me if I was the first Null she'd encountered in all that time.
Yes, but it's been decades, and coffee wasn't what it is now. Lex,
she said, turning to face the Boundary Witch.
Can you go get me a frappe? And an espresso. And maybe some of those scones we just baked?
Lex paused, looking wary, and I couldn't entirely blame her. Her one job here was to protect Maven, which she couldn't do from another room. She sort of trusted me, but leaving Maven unguarded with a Null went against all her instincts.
I don't think...
It's okay, I reassured her. I trusted Lex, and now that I'd met Charlie, well, whatever Maven told me was going to apply to her, too, someday. To Maven, I said, My friend Molly is waiting outside. Why don't I text her to bring it in? Lex shot me a grateful look. After the text was sent, Maven raised her eyebrows at me.
So, what is it you needed to ask me?
I took a deep breath. Okay, I don't know very much about the history of Nulls. Dashiell, my cardinal vampire, is relatively young. Most of the leadership in L.A. is young. This was common knowledge, and Maven nodded, gesturing for me to continue. Everything I've ever heard, however, suggests that Nulls can't have kids. I want to know if that's true. I had a further explanation ready, the thing about a boyfriend who wanted to have kids someday, but I decided to keep it as simple as possible.
Ah.
Maven sat back in her chair, regarding me. I tried not to squirm.
You're pregnant,
she said softly. I winced, and Lex's gaze shot toward me, her eyes widening. Before I could answer, Molly walked into the room carrying a small round tray of beverages and scones. Her path brought her straight into my radius.
Hi, she said cheerfully to the other vampire. I'm Molly. Love your dress.
Maven blinked, then looked down at herself and back up in a thoroughly human gesture.
Thank you.
Molly glanced at Lex and me, trying to gauge the mood.
Is everything okay?
She asked.
Of
course, it had occurred to me that Maven might figure it out, not because she could smell it on me or anything. Even if vampires could smell pregnancy, like dogs, it wouldn't apply to a Null. But because I'd come on such short notice, in secret, and I looked very much like I'd spent the last week vomiting. But I knew enough about old world politics to know that if I didn't confirm it, and there was no proof, Maven wouldn't have to act on it.
Let's speak hypothetically for a moment. Can we?
I said carefully.
Of course.
The vampire began lifting beverages, taking small, appreciative sips. She looked up at Molly and gestured to the last empty chair.
Will you be joining us?
Molly glanced at Lex, who shrugged her assent.
Thank you.
Molly perched on the edge of her chair, picking up a coffee from the tray that was already marked with her lipstick.
Hypothetically, I started again, if a null wanted to get pregnant, would it be possible?
Maven finished a sip and set down her cup.
Yes, she said simply, but very difficult.
Something inside me uncurled. Maven knew something about this. We had been right to come here.
Have you heard of it happening before?
She nodded.
In, let me see.
She glanced at the ceiling, squinting.
It was the 1240s, I believe.
Molly actually spat out some coffee, though she managed to turn her head at the last moment so it would land on the floor.
Holy shit! She blurted.
I raised an eyebrow at her, widening my eyes to say, Dude, we knew she was old. Molly nodded and sent a contrite look toward Maven.
Sorry, ma'am, she said. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'll just go get napkins.
She started to stand up, but Maven waved her off.
Don't worry, we'll take care of it later.
Did you actually meet a null who was pregnant? I asked, trying to get her attention away from Molly's gaffe. Lex was still silent, but she was looking at me like I'd sprouted another arm.
Just north of Istanbul. It wasn't called that then, of course. There was a small village called Azad, and it was populated almost entirely by witch clans, she began. This was shortly after the Inquisition began and spread across Europe, and many witches fled east to Azad, just as many Jews fled to Istanbul. In Azad, witchcraft was practiced. Well, openly is too